Welcome to another exciting episode of the NIDS View, a weekly show of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, where we are advancing peace, promoting stability, and helping you to think deterrence. Each week, we discuss and analyze a recent topic and provide insight into how it affects our national deterrence. We hope you enjoy this show.
Welcome back to another great episode of the NIDS View. Of course, I'm Adam Lowther, and today is Curtis McGiffin and Jim Petroski with me. And I just wanted to remind you, the listeners, that if you haven't gone over to the NIDS Knowledge podcast channel, we have, Chris Stone has done the space podcast. It's great. So if you haven't listened to that, go look for those space focused podcasts with Chris. And then of course, we're going to, we have an office of NIDS down in Australia, and we have an Australian version that'll be coming up about twice a month. So make sure you listen to those and get an Australian perspective on strategic issues. So there's a lot of great stuff going on NIDS. But for today, we wanted to talk about an article that just came out. It's hot off the presses, came out a few hours ago. You'll find an article titled, "The Sentinel ICBM Remains Affordable Because Context Matters." It was written by two gentlemen named Adam Lowther and Curtis McGiffin.
Hey-o.
And it's found at Breaking Defense. So, Curtis, the article we published was in response to much of the criticism that has ramped up in the weeks following the announcement that there would be a Nunn-McCurdy breach in the Sentinel program. And as you know, and Jim knows, and perhaps many of our listeners know, a Nunn-McCurdy breach is triggered. It's part of an acquisition mandate. It's part of the law that if the price of a program is going to increase 15% or more, that, there's this notification. And then, of course, that notification is public. And then for the Sentinel program, that means that advocates of nuclear disarmament say, hey, listen, we can't afford Sentinel anymore because the price has gone up and we need to cancel it. So it's a, it's an effort to, go back at the Sentinel program and see if they can't get it a second time. But, there's been a lot of criticism, Curtis, and I wanted to get from you first, if you could maybe talk about some of that criticism that we tried to address in our article.
Well, thanks, Adam. As always, good to see you. And Jim, good to see you. It never ceases to amaze me whenever a nuclear disarmament advocate will they'll jump at anything, right, to lay criticism to America's nuclear modernization. If they would only spend a quarter of the time attacking China and Russia's nuclear modernization programs that they spend on America's modernization programs, we might actually see some potential effect, at least of what they want to pursue. It is very interesting. What's the term, Adam? Right, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics, and, yep, and numbers. They say numbers never lie. I would argue that numbers can lie all the time, and this may be one of those examples as we look at those. And so again, I think this is just another crude attempt to sort of smack around the Sentinel program and embarrass the Air Force and the contractors involved in Sentinel. And that's unfortunate because it really does take out of context the real issue, which is why we titled the article as we did, right? Context matters. So let's first look at Nunn-McCurdy writ large, right? It came out in the 1982 National Defense Authorization Act. I mean, this is a Cold War relic, right? And it is a fine example of what happens when you write law into NDAAs and it sort of lives in perpetual existence in through these examples. But for what its purpose was, you know, to sort of catch these exorbitant potential growth and cost errors that might be handled by maybe unscrupulous defense contractors and these sorts of things. You know, I guess you could argue that the law worked, right? That Nunn-McCurdy worked because it did get identified that they were going to be in what's defined as critical breach, which is between 30% and 50% of the baseline. And of course there are significant breaches, which is, I think, 15% to 25% or 15% to 30% of the baseline. And real quick, just as a, you know, just a quick numbers that I could find between 2007 and 2015. So over an 8-year period, there were 24 critical and 13 significant Nunn-McCurdy breaches. This is nothing new. And in fact, in September of 23, there was a Nunn-McCurdy breach for the F-15 electronic warfare kit. It was 39% over its baseline. Generally, a Nunn-McCurdy breach happens at least once or twice a year, and these things sort of occur. So as we understand what the bureaucracy, why it functions the way it does, you can assess whether or not it's a good or bad thing. But in the end, there was an issue here, and I think the article lays out what those challenges were, and they're numerous. They're not necessarily applying to the things that are already under contract. There were things in some infrastructure issues that were laid out in the future. And we can't ignore part of this Nunn-McCurdy breach. It's got to be, you know, the significant inflation rate that we have experienced here over the last few years. From the original baseline in 2015 to 2024, it's a 30% inflation rate. And that's just nothing to sneeze at. And if you take out the good years, the pre-COVID years, if you do that measurement from 2020 to 2024, four measly years, the inflation rate has been 20%. And so for the same reasons why we're finding our mortgage rates to be unaffordable, our credit card rates to be unaffordable, et cetera, we are also seeing that impact contracts and future contracts that have yet to be levied but are planned to be, and that is essentially affecting the bottom dollar as projected. Nobody projected 8 years ago what in that a 30 plus rate inflation rate, and that becomes very difficult as we look ahead. And Adam, I thought the article does a pretty good job of laying out that argument.
Yeah, and part of the challenge is, you know, we say this in the article and you just said it, but it's not that Northrop Grumman specifically is overcosting the actual components under contract right now. So Northrop Grumman is providing the missile, mm-hmm. you know, at its estimated cost. It's doing that. The big problem is the infrastructure. And when you actually get down, you know, into the infrastructure and you have to start pricing it. And remember, this is a program that goes from 2015 to 2085, I think. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Or 2075. It's think about how difficult that is for even, you know, a godlike acquisition officer in the Air Force to be able to estimate costs of a complex program, you know, for over 50 years, which is, you know, there's so much that we don't know and understand that's going to happen, like COVID, for example. And COVID has fundamentally changed our economy.
Yeah.
It's changed how we work. And that happened in the matter of a year or two. And so acquisition, you know, pricing is, it's almost impossible to get it right. And I wanted Jim to jump in and, you know, because it's these follow on elements of this huge weapons acquisition program that are proving to be challenging. And Jim, you have probably more experience with this than we do. Is there sort of any kind of insight that you can provide on these types of programs or the cost estimating or just some of the challenges or ways to get any of this right in a way that we haven't thus far?
Well, thanks, Adam. Let me start out by saying I'm really surprised that these two guys wrote this article because they're really not into this kind of stuff. And also, since I'm the president of the company, during the 6 weeks it took you to do this, both of you tried to come to me and tell me the inflation rate went up and you needed a pay raise to finish it. So
that's
both
right.
of those things.
37%.
Luckily, I don't fall under none McCurdy, so I wasn't worried about it at all. So let me first start out. I'm gonna put a different spin on it. It's good in government that we have these guardrails on the system to keep people in check and balance. And so my argument would be, first of all, these guardrails are important because it brings us back to the forefront that this is a program that's going to last a long time. Imagine if in 2015 we started this program and no one said beans about it until 2085. I think the American public would be sort of missing the point of this whole program. And so we bring it to the forefront, which is good. Now, when we bring it to the forefront, Adam, you said, I have experience managing these kinds of programs, nothing this large. This is a massive project with a massive amount of moving parts that are covering all kinds of disciplines, everything from scientific effort and analysis that are specialized in great ways, all the way down to tradesmen and, you know, business managers, et cetera, at the very lowest levels. And each one of those levels takes a hit every time our economy changes. And that has to be part of the forecast. And I think that's the feedback mechanism I walk away with. I'm not a disarmament person. So when I saw this article initially, I said, okay, this looks like they're taking a shot at the Sentinel program, but I'm glad we're bringing it to the forefront. And I'm excited to know that they are continuing the program and we're seeing that they're making it meet the challenge that's necessary. Now, I want to pass on to Curtis because Curtis said, you know, well, how do we reduce this? And he took a shot across the water to China and Russia. And I agree. If you wanted to make the Sentinel program smaller, tell them to reduce the amount of weapons that they're developing and targets they're developing for us to have to counter target. And then we might be able to stop, you know, the numbers game against them because we have no other choice to be a viable deterrent against what they have already sponsored as a threat to the United States. And so the American public needs to see it that way, in my opinion. Now, the last piece before I'll turn it back to you, Adam, is when I read your article, and by the way, it's a good article, and I'm glad NIDS is able to produce material like this that is valuable to assess what's happening in the government, but also in our nuclear deterrence enterprise. And that is that every component here that we're working that is enumerated, and you guys didn't go through every detail of each piece, but I imagine somebody somewhere went through in an accounting line by line by line. And I sort of wish that could be brought to the attention of the American public to see how many people, how many jobs, how many businesses, how many organizations are involved in this. And the fact that it's only a small overrun, in my opinion, a small overrun given the economy the way it is, I think it's doing pretty well. And I hope that the review on this will come out as such and highlight the fact that another 5 years from now, we'll probably have to look at it again if, you know, we're still heading in the same direction. So that's my opinion. Back to you, Curtis. You're laughing, so maybe you might add something in.
No, I tell you what, Jim, very astute observation here. You know, this is... overall, so to your point, I think the fact that there was an overrun and that the government and the Air Force has said we're committed to staying the course is not only a fine example of the value of the nuclear deterrent and the need to do the modernization rather than, you know, throw the whole baby out with the bathwater, but it is also an acknowledgement that while this is a non-McCurdy breach, these numbers are tiny. I mean, we're talking, it's now $130 billion over 10 years. That's $13 billion. It's less than 1.4% of the defense budget to do the Sentinel modernization. And that budget is only growing. We're talking about
impossible. No, 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 no. Wasn't it 1.4% of the Air Force budget?
I'm sorry. No, no.
Not the defense budget. It's the Air Force budget. I think it's 1% of the Air Force budget.
I'm looking at the defense budget. If we're talking $13 billion divided by about $900 billion, it's about 1.4%, I think, of that number, just doing my simple math. And so when I think through this, this is a tiny rounding error in the overall Pentagon budget, which is huge as it is. And again, the amount of peace and stability that we get out of those dollars that are spent is priceless. Let me point out again, the U.S. government wants to give the Ukraine $60 billion to continue the fight that is larger than the entire budget of the U.S. Marine Corps. So the cost of war, okay, the cost to fight a war that we're not even fighting in, the cost to fund another state's war is half of the 10-year defense modernization of our deterrent designed to prevent our participation in those wars.
You know, just to offer some context, let me give three examples that we brought up in the article. So let's take the healthcare.gov website, just the website, healthcare.gov. That contract was let to create the website was going to cost $464 million. But in the end, it cost $824 million. It was double. The International Space Station was let. It was supposed to cost $17 billion. In the end, it cost $74 billion. And then one more example, a veterans hospital in Orlando. The cost was supposed to be $254 million. It ended up being $616 million, more than twice as much. And then two more examples. I've said this one before. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services estimates that between $50 and $70 billion a year in those two programs, Medicare and Medicaid, is lost to waste, fraud, and abuse. That's the entire nuclear budget every year. It's lost to waste, fraud, and abuse. And I bet most people didn't even know about this stuff. And then let me give you one last example. The Corona Relief Fund, which was the first year, just over a year, of the Biden administration, that was over $900 billion. The federal administrator of that program estimates that $400 billion in about a year was lost to fraudulent payments, much of it to foreign entities. We'll pay for the entire Sentinel program, the entire B-21 Raider program, and the LRSO.
Let me add one more to that. Okay, real quick, Jim, let me just jump in on this. So back in 2019, pre-COVID, there was an article in Forbes magazine by Adam, and I'm going to murder this guy's name, I apologize, Andrzejewski. And he wrote that from 2004 to 2019, there was an analysis done that the 20 of the largest federal agencies admitted to paying out $1.2 trillion, with a T, dollars in improper payments. These are improper grants, loans, all the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security fraud and abuse, earned income tax credit abuses, et cetera, pre-COVID. And that the OMB says that the recapture audits didn't make financial sense, and that they argued that it would cost too much money to claw back all of that. So in 15 years, we threw away $1.2 trillion in fraud. That was the exact amount of the entire modernization program over 30 years. We, as a federal government, sort of threw that away in 15 years. So I don't want to hear complaints about we spend too much money on the nuclear enterprise. As Secretary of Defense Mattis once said, we can afford to defend and protect ourselves.
And let me ask this question to our listeners. How many of you knew that we had all of this massive loss of federal dollars to all of these wasteful programs? Did you even know that happened?
Right.
But yet somehow we're told that we just can't afford $50 billion or $60 billion a year for nuclear. It's not nuclear modernization. It's nuclear operations, which is,
right,
you know, the ongoing fielding of forces, the maintenance of those forces, and the modernization of those forces. And, oh, just for good measure, the bomber force primarily functions as a conventional force. But yet we're going to throw the entire cost of those conventional operations into the nuclear modernization budget. We'll do that just for good measure. And that equals, you know, less than 0.1% of the federal budget. And yet somehow that's what's not affordable. $400 billion to right. COVID relief, that's that kind of waste, that's affordable. $50 to $70 billion a year in Medicare, Medicaid fraud, that's affordable. But this isn't. And it's a disingenuous argument. It's truly disingenuous.
Yeah, let me chime in here because the two of you are just having a fun time throwing numbers around, and I'm just a simple engineer, so I can't figure out all those numbers. But let me take another approach on the experience I've had with this. The big takeaway I have from each of these programs that you're talking about, federal programs, government programs, they all tend to have cost overruns, you know, that you're mentioning, have cost overruns. They're very expensive, waste, fraud, and abuse. I'm going to flip that on its head and say, imagine how peaceful we would be if we had more efficient, more streamlined, more manageable federal programs where these cost losses were maintained or managed. Imagine if that phrase, waste, fraud, and abuse, was not there, how much better our healthcare would be, how much better our roads would be, how much better our defense would be. And I instead of pointing at nukes bad, this bad, that bad, all of these things are bad from a government standpoint. Now, I'm gonna tell you, I regret saying that here, because hopefully someone in government didn't hear me saying, oh, we need to do another survey of how we do administrate government contracts. Because I think last time I responded when in military about how a government contract and a development of a system was being developed, we ended up with DTS, Defense Travel System. And for those of you in the military that are listeners, you know how well that worked out for all of us. So I'm afraid
it's your fault, Jim.
About it once. I'd say it must be, because I did complain. I was part of a group that was, you know, looking into that. But anyway, you know, hats off to people trying to do things better, but we've got to be smarter, more efficient. And that's why, you know, I go back on this, that having guardrails in a system is good, but what really needs to be takeaway is not get rid of the system, the nuclear sentinel system, but rather what we really need is a more efficient, more manageable, more streamlined, more effective system for managing government programs, so all this money can be recapitalized. Because it's what, the 20th of March? If I'm not mistaken, we're less than a month away from me paying that big tax amount on the 15th of April. And I'd like to see those tax dollars go to the best use that they can. And I see that the Sentinel, and you know, you wouldn't expect anything other from any of the NIDS folks here, that we see that as a good investment, because it keeps me free to go ride my horse, build a business, go on a trip, everything else, which I could not do, buy the food I want. All those kind of things are available to me because I live in a free country that's not at war. And that's the advantage of this funding that gets overlooked in the end.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, of course. You know, I'll tell you, there have been more than 100 in the last decade, there have been more than 150 acquisition reform studies conducted to try to figure out how do we make federal acquisition better. So we know what's wrong with the system. And on occasion, you'll have these sort of reform movements, and then ultimately they lose steam and the system is back to being what it was. And part of it You know, for airmen who have been around a while, they'll remember the case of Darlene Drurian. And Darlene Drurian, who got, you know, she was a, I think she was an SES in the Air Force. And then, you know, she was going to lease. So she directed contracts to, I think it was Boeing, maybe. I'm not sure which defense contractor. And then she went and worked for them. And, you know, there was all the breach of ethics and all that. And so, you know, that sort of had a value of perhaps $1 million. But to prevent that from ever happening again, Congress created more than $1 billion worth of regulations to solve a $1 million problem. Mm-hmm. And so part of what makes things as expensive as they are is that the oversight is, you know, it's designed to prevent anybody from ever being embarrassed by somebody being dishonest and, you know, stealing or whatever else. Now, it doesn't actually do any of that, but it does make these programs a lot more, you know, expensive. And but it's also, here's the fundamental problem that we haven't even really discussed. Minuteman III was designed to have a 10-year lifespan. It was not designed to be, the program is 55 years old. Those weapons are 55 years old now. And they're going to be in service for, you know, up to another decade. They're well beyond, I mean, think about it. 10 years, they're now 55. And of course, that is, and now we're going to say, oh, well, what we're going to do is we're going to replace Sentinel, and we're going to plan for it to last 50 years. And then we wonder why this, you know, once a lifetime, it's literally a once a lifetime program with, you know, tons of 1960 era. These are Minuteman I and Minuteman II original silos in some cases. That we're wondering why we can't quite get right how much it's going to cost to rip all that stuff out, you know, put completely new stuff in. I mean, 10 years ago, we were in the Air Force, we're talking about what's going to be the cost to replace the copper cables. And of course, after COVID, the price of copper skyrocketed. And so therefore, you know, all those prices are just got blown out of the water. And this is the fundamental problem with these huge 30, 40, 50 year programs that are spread across 49 states. And, you know, it's almost impossible for anybody that's a human being to, or even a team of human beings, to say, we'll tell you exactly how much it's going to cost over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 decades. It's impossible.
Well, you know, it is a great observation. You know, the cost of compliance, right, is very difficult to measure and calculate, especially in the distance, right? Because laws change. Often they succumb to political ambitions with regard to, you know, whether it's, you know, environmental impact studies, save this fish or that. Newt, or we can have, you know, these sorts of folks doing this kind of work and not these sorts of folks and so forth. The cost of compliance is huge, and it is largely what is part of this Nunn-McCurdy breach, right? Infrastructure is largely controlled by material and compliance costs, and I think that is where we are really challenged in trying to understand that. It's a bit frustrating that the Air Force hasn't been able to sort of figure that one out. But nonetheless, we are where we are, and we can't do things the way we used to do them. I like to remind everybody, we built all of these ICBM silos in a very short amount of time. I mean, within a series of months, we were building ICBM silos at a rate of 1.8 per day. And they were being, in fact, the construction had started during the Cuban Missile Crisis to the point where they rushed to get one squadron done so that Kennedy would have one squadron of Minuteman I missiles available to him And during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he referred to those as his ace in the hole during the whole 13-day effort. So it is amazing how this happens. And when you don't have any compliance issues, like, say, the Chinese, who could do whatever they want environmentally and labor-wise and so forth, you know, they built, it's estimated, they started building their ICBM silos out in the Gobi Desert in March of 2021. The 23 report to Congress on China stated that it is estimated they completed the construction of all of those missile silos in 2022. So they built over 300 silos in something less than 18 months. And that is amazing in today's standards, I think, and probably something we would never be able to do in the good old United States of America, for the whole reason of bureaucracy and compliance. And I think that is something we really have to consider as we move forward in national security. This is the classic case of we've looked in the mirror and we've seen the enemy, and it is us.
Yeah, it's a good one. Jim, we're about out of time, but I wanted you to have the last words.
Oh, no, I got to have one last word. So let me come back.
Curtis can have the second last word.
Okay.
But my last word will be pretty simple. By the time this show airs, Sentinel remains affordable. Context matters. By the venerable Adam Lowther and Curtis McGiffin will be published. If you haven't read it by now, go back and take a look. Hopefully a lot has not changed between today's cast and next week's show being published.
Airing date. Yeah.
Who knows? Things will change. But I want to just add one word to Curtis's almost last word. And that was that I'm glad that we have all this oversight, because every time we make a new rule, a new law and everything else, it gets cheaper, faster and easier. That's the way our federal government works. And so I'm glad to hear we're going to put more oversight to make things easier. And that's what it's there for, right?
Okay. I think you're talking to
sarcasm. You're pulling my leg, aren't you?
So on to you, Curtis.
Well done. All right, let me leave our listeners with this simple math. Nunn-McCurdy breach aside, the nuclear enterprise, including the modernization, is costing somewhere around $35 billion of our defense budget, right? And we've already talked about, you know, the 4.5% of the budget that is. Let's do the math. If you divide that by the 330 million American citizens that we have, according to our last census count last year, that divides to about $105 per person per year, $8.75 per month, 28 cents per day, and 1.15 cent per hour. That is the cost to the American people for 75 years of peace and stability and a world without a World War III. It is a bargain. So Jim's talking about paying his taxes. Jim, $105 of your taxes, that's all it costs for peace and stability. That's a check I would write every year.
You know, it's about the cost of TurboTax these days. And so, you know, one thing I was thinking was every year I look up, what is the cost of compliance for paying your federal taxes? And it is now about to hit $1 trillion a year Americans spend just to pay their taxes.
A trillion dollars.
Right. That's in dollars. That's not time either, right?
Yeah, that's dollars. That's just the cost of TurboTax, accountants, all the tax lawyers, all of that stuff cost American citizens almost $1 trillion a year today. You know,
that's like a 12th of our federal budget.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's if we have a, you know, I think 12%. The U.S., you know, the U.S. Economy is now at about 30 trillion, you know, so a trillion out of 30 trillion goes to pay taxes.
Okay. But our federal budget's like 7.
Yeah. Most of it borrowed, but still. Yeah.
No doubt.
Okay. Well, gents, as always, enjoyed the discussion, and hopefully you, the listeners, walk away from this episode saying, you know what? I think Sentinel is still affordable. And in fact, context does matter. And the Sentinel program is by no means the biggest problem that the federal government has with spending its money wisely. So, of course, I want to thank you, the listeners, for joining us on this episode of the NIDS View. And as always, we want to remind you to think deterrence.
Thank you for listening to the NIDS View. This show is produced under the NIDS Podcasting Network, a division of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. NIDS is a 501c3 organization dependent upon donations to provide this podcast and bring about awareness of the peacekeeping value of U.S. strength and our national deterrence. You can catch all of our podcasts or provide feedback at thinkdeterrence.com. I would like to thank our producer, Kimberly Charrington, our sponsors, and all the fantastic members of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies for making this podcast possible. Stay tuned next week for another exciting and informative The NIDS View.